Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and welcome to the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. This is a space for down-to-earth, honest conversations about what's really going on in your body in your 40s and how to support yourself through it. If you're feeling a bit out of sync, overwhelmed, or just not quite like yourself, you're in the right place. So let's get into today's episode. Welcome back to another week and another episode with me, your host, Francesca. So today I want to talk about something that sits right at the center of hormonal health, particularly in perimenopause, and that's stress. Now, I've talked about stress on previous episodes. Probably in every episode I touch on stress in some way. I've done specific episodes on cortisol, anxiety, stress, and how it shows up in perimenopause and how it impacts our entire experience and symptoms. But I think that we can't talk about this enough because it is so impactful. Now, when people hear the word stress, they typically think about emotional stressors, you know, work stress, family relationships, life stress, and so on. But in the body, stress is much broader than that. Your body experiences stress from things like blood sugar swings, lack of sleep, poor sleep, undereating, whether unknowingly or not, overexercising or the wrong types of exercise for your body and your hormones, chronic low-grade inflammation, any illness or infection, whether that's a virus or a parasite in your gut that you don't know about, dehydration, emotional pressures, being overcommitted, all of these different things stressing out the body internally. And during perimenopause, the body becomes much more sensitive to all of these signals, way more than it ever was before. And stress doesn't just affect one system or one hormone. It affects the entire hormonal system and your system as a whole. Now, one of the first things that stress can interfere with is ovulation. And ovulation is really important, fertility aside, because ovulation is how we make progesterone. And progesterone is made after ovulation in the second half of the menstrual cycle, known as the luteal phase. And as we move through our 40s, ovulation naturally becomes less frequent and or less robust. But lifestyle factors can significantly influence how consistently ovulation occurs and how well it occurs. Now, one of the key characteristics of perimenopause is that progesterone starts to decline. That starts way before changes to estrogen for most women. So as we start to move past mid to late 30s, progesterone is already starting to decline, basically because of this change in how well and how often we manage to ovulate. But the good news, and this is what I love about the work that I do, the work that I teach, is that there are things that we can do to help the body to produce progesterone for as long as we possibly can. So even though it is natural that as we start to make less progesterone because we ovulate less, there are things that we can do to support the body to ovulate more than it would have if we hadn't intervened. And that is really, really powerful. And this is where stress becomes relevant, because ovulation is actually controlled by the brain. So there's a communication system between the brain, the pituitary gland in the brain, and the ovaries, and it's called the HBG axis. So you may have heard me talk about the HPA axis before, which is the link between the brain and the adrenal glands, which releases your stress hormones. But this is the hypothalamic pituitary gonadal axis. So it's the link between the brain and the ovaries, which produce estrogen and progesterone and ovulate to produce progesterone. So when the brain perceives stress, whether that's emotional stress, illness, blood sugar instability, undereating or overtraining, it then can suppress the signals that trigger ovulation, because essentially the brain is constantly assessing your environment, is always scanning and looking for safety. It's always asking, is this a safe time for potential reproduction? And if the answer is no, then ovulation is either delayed or completely skipped. And if ovulation doesn't happen, then progesterone simply isn't produced in that cycle. So stress can directly influence progesterone levels through its impact on ovulation. And although we start to ovulate less the further we move through our 40s, we can intervene and make progesterone for as long as possible in higher amounts that we would have done if we hadn't intervened. There is so much we can do with our lifestyle and our nutrition and maybe supplements that we can do to support the changes and make the symptoms and experiences far less intense. And progesterone plays so many important roles in the body. It helps to balance estrogen in the second half of the cycle. That is really key, because what that does is it helps to prevent what we would call unopposed estrogen, a situation where we have the entire menstrual cycle led by estrogen and it's not balanced out in the second half of the cycle by its partner hormone, progesterone. When that doesn't happen, we tend to experience symptoms like heavy periods, clotting, painful periods, and then a worse time in the PMS phase before our period came. So breast tenderness, breast soreness, mood swings, irritability, headaches, migraines, and so on. So we absolutely want progesterone to come along in that second half of the cycle to balance estrogen out and support those, prevent those symptoms. Progesterone also supports, and this is particularly important in perimenopause, a sense of calm and emotional well-being. It supports good sleep, stable mood, concentration and focus. It supports metabolism through its thermogenic effect. It supports thyroid hormone production. It supports fluid balance in the body. So it helps to prevent those puffy feelings around your ankles, fingers and wrists. It supports brain health and blood flow to the brain. It even supports bone health. Progesterone increases a calming brain chemical called GABA, which promotes the sense of relaxation and reduction in anxiety. A lot of women, including myself at the beginning of my perimenopause journey, start to experience, when for me it was around age 41, when I just suddenly noticed that most evenings I was starting to feel unexplainedly anxious and just, you know, I couldn't relax. I was tired, but I just couldn't wind myself down. And it was something I'd actually never experienced before. And that was the first sign for me that, my progesterone's declining. I might not have made any this cycle, or maybe I did ovulate, but I just didn't make enough progesterone to what my brain and body is used to. And then I'm feeling it in these symptoms. And in terms of bone health, one study found that women experiencing cycles where they don't ovulate, called anovulatory cycles, during perimenopause lost around 1% of bone density per year. So although we tend to look at estrogen as the bone protective hormone, which it absolutely is, really, really key for bone health, progesterone also seems to play a protective role, and particularly for spinal bone density. So it just highlights how important it is to support ovulation during these years as much as we possibly can. But of course, you know, if you're listening to this and you're on the oral contraceptive pill or injection, for example, for whatever reason, maybe it's to manage hormonal symptoms, maybe it's for birth control reasons. Either way, if you are and you're thinking, well, I don't make progesterone because I don't ovulate, obviously, because you're on the medication. It's not that you're doomed. It's just that we still want to support the body in all the ways that I talk about. Those all still apply to you. You still want to be supporting your body in the best way that you possibly can. Okay, so moving on from progesterone, though, because that's just one piece of the puzzle. It's an important piece, but it is just one piece. Because as I said, stress actually affects the entire hormonal endocrine system. So one of the key systems involved here is the adrenal system, which I've talked about before. So your adrenal glands, they're tight, two tiny little glands. They sit on top of your kidneys. They actually look like little kidney beans, and they produce cortisol and adrenaline. And they also produce DHEA. Now, DHEA is sometimes referred to as the mother hormone because it contributes to things like mood and resilience, energy levels, maintenance of muscle mass and immune function, things that we would probably never think that when we think of DHEA. And it's also a precursor hormone, which basically means it can go on to produce other hormones, particularly testosterone. So we want healthy levels of DHEA in order to have healthy levels of testosterone. But if the adrenal glands are under pressure, then obviously, guess what? They're not going to be able to make as much DHEA as they would otherwise. And that will start to affect our testosterone levels. And that has been my story over the last several years, actually, that I've been showing low DHEA and low testosterone. And it's always when I do adrenal stress index testing with saliva, I'm always finding that, yes, it's down to my poor little adrenal glands, my cortisol, my brain to adrenal gland, the HPA axis link, just not working as well as it should due to stress, and therefore less DHEA production and less testosterone production. So when chronic stress starts to dysregulate that brain to adrenal link, we can see changes in DHEA levels, and that can contribute to symptoms like fatigue, low resilience, low libido, or even changes in body composition. So stress also has a direct impact on sleep. So I've talked about this in previous episodes. I'll link to it actually in the show notes. Cortisol follows a natural daily rhythm, also known as our circadian rhythm. So it should rise in the morning to help us wake up, and then it should gradually start to fall throughout the day, and it reaches its lowest point at night. That drop in cortisol at night allows the brain to release melatonin instead. And that's the hormone that helps us to fall asleep, but not just fall asleep, but stay asleep as well. So when stress keeps cortisol elevated, you know, later in the day at a time when it should naturally be declining, melatonin production can be like halted, disrupted, you know, we can't make as much. And what we tend to experience, particularly in as we move through perimenopause, is difficulty falling asleep, but also difficulty staying asleep, because we need enough melatonin not only to get us to fall asleep, but to keep us asleep all night, you know, until the morning. So we could be waking up between 2 and 4 a.m. roughly every night. We might be feeling wired and at night, but really exhausted during the day. So sleep disruption itself then becomes another stress signal to the body, creating a cycle that can then start to be difficult to break. And, you know, unless we really just get in there and get to the root, which is potentially the stress piece. So just being in perimenopause itself can start to intensify or amplify our stress sensitivity. So hormones begin to fluctuate differently during perimenopause. As I said, progesterone begins to decline. That's the earlier, that happens in the earlier part of perimenopause. And then the further we go through perimenopause, it declines even further. And then estrogen starts to spike and drop unpredictably. That's the new erratic nature of estrogen that we start to experience as we move through. So those hormonal shifts start to influence that HPA axis, the brain to adrenal communication link. Estrogen and progesterone have normally a protective effect on this brain to adrenal system, on your stress response, basically. So when estrogen levels become more erratic and progesterone declines, the body starts to feel more stress reactive. We can be in fight or flight, basically, far easier. And we can sometimes get stuck there way more than we would have before. And this is why a lot of women say that things that never used to bother them suddenly start to feel overwhelming. And again, this is definitely something I dealt with in my early 40s. Even something as simple as washing up, I still get this now sometimes, where if I'm having a particularly stressful day or I've overworked, overcommitted myself that day, when it comes to just something simple like washing up, I find it really stressful, very overwhelming. I'm trying to put something on the drying rack and I'll drop it. And I'm just feeling so overwhelmed and you just want to scream and just walk out of the kitchen. So, you know, that's something that potentially wouldn't have happened 5 years ago, 10 years ago, even maybe 2-3 years ago. So this is, you know, just an example of how we can become far more reactive and more overwhelmed more easily. Now, the stresses that we experience in today's modern world are often very different from the acute stress our bodies evolved to handle. So for a lot of us, modern day stress would include things like juggling work and family responsibilities, emotional labor within the household. You know, running a household basically is an emotional constantly making sure you have the right food in, you know, the washing's done. And like, it's literally like another job, isn't it? Managing a house, especially when there's kids involved as well. It could be caring for aging parents, very common as we move through our 40s, that our parents now are at an age where they need support from us. Constant digital stimulation, whether that's WhatsApp, text messages, you know, social media, DMs, scrolling through social media, the news is on tap, and that is constant. Poor sleep, over-exercising, or like I say, exercise that isn't helpful for our hormonal system. Under-eating, even unknowingly, undernourishment, blood sugar instability, even things like being slightly dehydrated or drinking too much caffeine can start to signal stress to the brain. Or as I've said in previous episodes, if we're drinking caffeine first thing in the morning on an empty stomach in perimenopause, when things are that much more unstable and sensitive, that can be a stressor as well, even if it wasn't in the past, or skipping breakfast for too long or having a low protein breakfast. Now, chronic stress will also start to affect how the body metabolizes and clears your hormones, specifically estrogen. So, for example, stress can influence the liver detox pathways that help break down estrogen and eliminate it. It can also impact gut health, which also plays a really key role in estrogen clearance. And that's when we'd start to notice, for example, heavy periods, breast pain, headaches, mood swing, worse PMS, clotty periods, painful periods, when we're not able to efficiently clear out estrogen. So stress has this far-reaching impact. There's also another layer of stress that often gets overlooked. I've talked about this in previous episodes. I will also link to those in the show notes. So living in a way that feels misaligned with who you are, a lot of women move through life on autopilot for so many years. We're meeting everybody else's needs. We're saying yes when we want to say no. We're carrying endless responsibilities. We're supporting partners, children, workplaces, extended family, friends. And somewhere along the way, our own needs can start to drop to the bottom of the list. And that constant depletion from ourselves can also be a form of stress, or is a form of stress on the nervous system. The nervous system's, you know, constantly, like I said, scanning for stress. And this is one of the biggest stressors. So something I ask my clients a lot is, do you experience joy in your day? Not just in your life, but in your day. And for most of us, that's a firm no. Like, well, or it could be, yeah, I walk my dog and that's great. But even, you know, more than that, other than that, it could be like, no, just no. When I go on holiday once a year, I'm, you know, experiencing joy. It's not going to be constant, of course, that's unrealistic. But is there some balance? That's the question. Is there contentment in your week? Is there a sense of peace, a sense of calm, a sense of, yeah, I'm content with this. This is good. Or does it feel like you're constantly pushing through obligations with really little space for yourself, constantly fighting fires as you go through the week just to get to Friday? So that's where self-care really matters. And the term self-care, you know, wellness, well-being has been thrown around a lot. And it's often marketed as things like, you know, baths, facials, spa days. And of course, all these things are lovely. But the genuine meaning of self-care is really about how you live your life day to day for yourself. Things like creating space in your schedule. I always talk about this white space. Do you have any white space in your schedule? You know, that thing where someone says, what are you doing Monday? And you might be free on Monday, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you're available to do what it is they want you to do. Because maybe you're free on Monday, but you want to be free on Monday, or you're free on Sunday and you want to keep it that way. So, you know, I've definitely had to explain that to people in the past where they might say, oh, you're free next weekend. I'll say, yes, I'm free next weekend, but I'm not actually free because the plan is to be free and to not do anything. I want the white space. And that should be within our whole week, you know, drip fed within our schedule. Spending time doing things that genuinely light you up. Spending time in nature, preferably daily, even if it's just 5-10 minutes here and there. Connecting with supportive people, so people that support you, people that lift you up, people that make you laugh. Getting morning light exposure, you know, early, within an hour of waking, ideally. And protecting your sleep, protecting your bedtime, protecting your evening routine leading up to bedtime. Those are things that regulate your nervous system and help bring the body back into balance. Sometimes it might look like big life changes for some people, or for some of us, depending on what stage we're at with our life. But often it's just small shifts, like a 5-minute coffee break in the garden, or green tea break, herbal tea break, where you would normally have either not taken that break. Let's say you work from home, or you would have taken that break, but you'd have just scrolled on your phone in the kitchen. Let's now do that 5-minute coffee break in the garden, or in the, you know, in the yard, wherever you have some outdoor space, and or just by the window if you don't have any outdoor space. Just looking out at the sky, looking out at whatever you can see around you nature-wise, and not scrolling or talking to anyone. Could it be a short walk through your local park? Just, you know, whether it's daily or even 3 or 4 times a week. Maybe you used to do that before, but you were always on the phone, or you were always listening to something, or you were always scrolling. Now that little tweak could be that you do that, but you do it mindfully. You're taking in the sounds and the sights of nature instead. It could be reading a book before bed instead of scrolling on your phone. So I hear lots of women will say, I scroll on my phone in bed. And then they just put their phone down and expect their poor brain to switch off melatonin to just suddenly come out of nowhere and allow them to sleep. But that's not how it works, because the scrolling on your phone is increasing cortisol. And so then you put your phone down and try and sleep, and it's just not going to happen. Or when it does come, it won't allow you to sleep all night, because like I said earlier, we haven't made enough melatonin there to keep us asleep all night. So that little shift for you could be, instead of scrolling on your phone in bed, you now have a rule that 1 hour before you go to bed is when you put your phone away until the next day. And instead you just lay in dim lighting or sit up in bed reading a nice fiction book. Could it be meeting a friend for coffee, going for a walk with a friend, or just like simply just giving yourself permission to say no to something that drains you? Maybe it could be, I've had clients say, right, you know, this week I'm going to challenge myself to say no twice, to think, because this, you know, it's very common that we're saying yes a lot throughout the week to things that drain us, people that drain us. And I had this one client that said, I'm going to do 2 no's this week, because there was that many things that drain her that she says yes to, that she could just choose two of them that particular week to say no to. And even just that has made a huge difference. And she'll be building on that as she goes as well. So the key message I want you to take away from this episode is that stress affects far more than just progesterone. It affects everything. It's affecting estrogen, testosterone, DHEA, ovulation, cortisol, adrenaline. It's affecting your sleep, the estrogen and progesterone balance. It's impacting your thyroid function, blood sugar regulation, and ultimately how we feel day to day, you know, our overall sense of well-being and contentment. Supporting your nervous system is not just a wellness trend. It is everywhere. Nervous system support, nervous system regulation, it's absolutely everywhere on social media. But I promise you, it's not just a wellness trend. It is one of the most powerful ways to support hormone health during perimenopause and your entire experience of perimenopause as you move through and your experience of finally reaching menopause and beyond. And sometimes the most powerful thing that you can do for your hormones isn't another supplement, another test. It's creating more space, more rest, and more alignment in your life. So I really hope this episode has been helpful. If it's resonated, please do drop me a message on, you can DM me on Instagram or send me an email. The notes, all of the links to that will be in the show notes for you. And if you would like some help, you know, whether that's one-to-one or inside the Midlife Thrive membership, or maybe you would just like to start with my free perimenopause quiz. There's 36 questions that help you get a personalized insight into what your body might be looking for right now, whether that's stress support, sleep support, nutrition support, or, you know, just gives you a nice place to start. So that will be linked in the show notes for you as well. So thank you for listening and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye. If you enjoyed this episode and you're wanting a bit more support, there's a few ways I can help you. You can take my free perimenopause quiz, join my Midlife Thrive membership, or work with me one-to-one. And I'll leave all the details in the show notes. And if this episode resonated, I'd love you to share it with someone who might need to hear it too. Thank you so much for being here. It really means a lot. And I'll see you in the next episode.